Howdy, writers! KJ here, staring ahead into fall 2021 and trying to ignore the fact that it feels like staring into the abyss. Stop. Wait. That's really not where I meant to go with that. What I want to focus on is the other part of fall. Crunchy leaves, pumpkins, apples, school supplies, fresh starts. If that's the part of fall you want more of, maybe it's time for a new beginning as a book coach. Just imagine enrolling in the classes, meeting a cohort, learning all the ways coaches are editorial and emotional support for writers, and then starting to line up your first clients. Students working with Author Accelerator say they begin to book authors before they're even done with the course, and often end up being booked months in advance. Sound like fun? Agreed. Go to bookcoaches.com to learn more.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay. Welcome to the hashtag AmWriting podcast. This is the podcast about writing all the things. Queries, proposals, novels, nonfiction books, poetry. This is the podcast, most of all, about getting the work done.
I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of 35 romance novels. You can find me at serenabowen.com. And my latest book is called Boyfriend.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and the new book, The Addiction Inoculation, all about preventing substance use in kids. And this week we have a guest I'm super excited about. And I have to sort of explain how we met this guest as an intro. So I was headed off with my kiddo, my younger kid, Finn, to a concert with one of his heroes. We flew to Washington, D.C. to go see a concert by a band called Sungaze. And Sungazer is just an incredible sort of merging of jazz and EDM and sort of electronic digital jazz blend sort of stuff, for those of you who don't know all the acronyms. And I got a text from a listener and an acquaintance, an internet acquaintance, right before, saying, by the way, I am having lunch today with the bassist Adam Neely's mom, and she's going to be at the show tonight. Would you like me to introduce you? And of course, I'm like, oh, absolutely. That would be so much fun. Another person to meet. I always like that. Plus, I figured it might impress my kid if, like, I have an in with Adam Neely's mom, because Adam is an incredible YouTube YouTuber who he does YouTube videos about music theory, and he's just a delight, and we love watching him. So I got talking with Kate. We got past the Adam's mom, Kate, and we got past the stuff about how my kid is such a fan. And of course, as it usually does, the topic turned to writing and publishing, because what else do writers and editors and agents and what else do we talk about? So we realized that there was a really cool topic here. Kate Fraser Neely is the author of a book that we're going to get to in just a second. But first and foremost, she is a master vocal coach. She has worked with so many amazing performers, choirs. She works by referral out of Johns Hopkins. She's just an incredible talent. She's been on Adam's show before, which is how I first saw her face and knew how to recognize her in a crowd. And she is here today to talk about basically everything not to do in self-publishing, because according to Kate, she made all the mistakes. Welcome to the show, Kate Fraser Neely of All the Mistakes.
How are you this morning?
Hi there. I am so happy to be here, and just can't wait to hear what Serena has to say.
I'm going to mostly facilitate, but sit back and listen, because I know if I were to self-pub something today, if I didn't have Serena around, I would make all the mistakes too. So could you tell us a little bit about your book and why you chose to go the self-publishing route in the first place?
Well, let me just say that the Singing Through Change, Women's Voices in Midlife, Menopause and Beyond was self-published, but it was by someone who knew what they were doing. Is by our publisher, Studio Boss Media. We're here today to talk about a book I wrote where I made all the mistakes.
See, I am so sorry. See, I made all the mistakes there too. And see, since my first book is called The Gift of Failure, I'm going to leave this in the audio so that everyone can hear the title of her very, and I of course now change my show notes, so that we can leave all that in the audio so that people can hear that, you know, we do make mistakes too. So please tell us all about your incredibly well done book, because I want to make sure we get the title in there, because your other book, your singing book is definitely out there. It is on your website. And then tell me all about your self-pub book that was all the mistakes.
Well, Singing Through Change is co-written by mm-hmm. me and Nancy Boss and Joanne Bozeman. And it's the first published book to discuss how hormones can change the singing voice. And while you might think that that's a fairly niche market, people have come out of the woodwork for it. It's a topic that has been studied in academia, but the results haven't been made accessible to most people who don't read academic studies or don't have access to them because of academic firewalls.
That's a familiar terrain for me. And we got talking about this actually because a while back we've interviewed a couple of audiobook narrators, and I explained the challenges of audiobook narrators. We were talking about Tanya Eby in particular was an audiobook narrator we interviewed who talked about the struggles she's gone through with as she ages and her voice becomes a little less flexible. You know, shifting between male and female voices in the text has become a little more challenging. And I said, I know exactly who could use your book. So it's absolutely applicable to people outside of the singing performance space.
And actually, medical doctors are aware of some studies that have been done on the speaking voice that prove, quote unquote, that there's not much change. But these are inaccurate. And certainly for somebody, because the singing voice and the acting voice need such a different set of parameters,
right?
That there is a huge difference. If we're here about the other book.
Yes, let's do it. I wanted to make sure I gave your other book space, though, since that was my mess up. So there you go. For the audiobook, and I know we do have audiobook narrators who listen to this podcast, so I wanted to make sure they heard all about it.
So let's hear about the other one. Yes. What was the other one?
So I'm a big believer in writing is writing. I don't know. Did Julia Cameron say that? I don't know where that phrase comes from. But I do have a lifelong history of creative, poetic, and journal writing, which, as we know, is not the same as book writing, but I loved writing and I love reading. And I do write professionally for academic journals and blogs and presentations, blah, blah, blah. But by the time I had celebrated 53 Christmases.
Nice way of putting it there.
I would say that the engine that drove the minutia of parenting and working and caring for the house, kids, marriage, had just come to a joyless, steamless halt. I also didn't know anything about perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. So I was just pretty much a mess. And I got very depressed thinking about the holidays. I think this was in October of that year. And it just seemed like this black hole of life-sucking obligations. So with the idea that writing is writing, I decided to clear my calendar of everything that wasn't absolutely necessary. And I let go of what I thought I needed to do as a parent. And I took my cue from the weather in the Northern Hemisphere. And I went within to find sustenance, by writing a series of meditations. And at that time, in 2009, there weren't that many women in midlife on blogs. It's hard to believe, but there really weren't. So I set out to write one meditation a day or one reflection a day on the whole holiday season based on the words of others and put it on my blog. It was a magical experience. It did everything that you would hope it would do. And I felt renewed. And then I forgot about it. And then I started noticing that sometimes blogs were turned into books. So I started, I started reading the material off and on. And I had several people read my book for clarity and typos. And I researched publishing companies in the writer's market, Tome. Remember those? We'd have those big books.
Absolutely.
I remember.
Then I just made an annual event of this process for like the next 4 years. I didn't know how to go on. The next 4 years, I just repeated the same thing when I had some time. And then I read books on query letters and agents. But with the resources I had, I couldn't figure out who would want my book, because there were plenty of Christian and feminist book publishers, but this book wasn't traditionally either.
Gotcha. And of course, our usual advice is go look in the acknowledgement section of the books that you think might tread similar sort of, if not the exact same territory, then, you know, at least with a nod to the territory you're trying to get into.
Very good advice. And here's the kicker. I didn't understand that traditional publishing could be a choice. It still feels like a cloak and dagger operation, but I started listening to your podcast after you, Jessica, and I met, and I've learned a lot from watching my friend Mindy Carlson, who appeared on your podcast recently. Mm-hmm. And in retrospect, I'm not sure why I didn't make the connection that what I had persisted in and accomplished in music and music education fields needed to be applied to publishing. Right?
It is very cloak and dagger, mainly because, I don't know, it feels like Serena has unlocked some like magic door, and then all the knowledge is there on the other side, and you have to have some, either your own Serena or some magic access to some book that doesn't really exist to give you all the secrets.
That's exactly right. And I'll try to make this quick because I want to hear what she has to say. So I became overwhelmed and frustrated. I didn't have a Serena to turn to. And
everyone needs a Serena to turn to, I'm telling you. Not just for the publishing stuff, but, you know, for all the other good things too.
And honestly, I thought I was supposed to do it alone. I think a lot of women think that. And
the word self is right there. The word self is right there in the name of what you're trying to do.
But then here's the other thing I would really love for people to understand from your podcast. I did not understand that self-publishing and using vanity press sites were different.
Yeah, that is a tricky thing. So did you end up with a site that was unhelpful to you?
I did. Mm-hmm. And so when I looked up self-publishing in 2016, came a lot of vanity press sites, and I thought they were the same thing as self-publishing. And I balked at what they charged and what they promised as being too good to be true, which is true.
Right.
But I spent 6 months trying to figure out Amazon's self-publishing program and just wasn't smart enough or couldn't compute or something.
Well, what year was this?
This was about 2016.
Okay.
And that's when I allowed myself to be suckered in by, I'm not naming the company, but if you'd like me to, I will.
Nope.
That's okay.
They're good at what they do. And the whole thing is set up to look legit. And you sign a contract, which I did read and combed through. You were supposed to be able to choose the price of your book. And I researched what similar books were priced and filled in the blanks, but they ignored that and posted ridiculously high price, which I think they do because they get a high profit on friends and family that will buy the book in those first months. Mm-hmm. And then they drop it to nothing after a while.
So let's just back up for 1 second. So the kind of company that you're talking about charges, did they charge you an upfront fee to publish?
Oh, yes. About $1,500.
Okay.
And I'm not opposed to investing in my craft,
sure.
Right? But not like that.
And then you lost control of the process, basically. So the book was published, but not in your own accounts. So you couldn't actually see the minute-to-minute stuff, right? And
what do you mean by minute-to-minute stuff?
Well, when I publish a book, I have a dashboard. It's published by me, so I can go see if I sold a copy before noon or not. You know, that's all accessible to me.
They do that, but and I can tell you what happened with that. But unless you know what's going on, it's hard to interpret the data that they're giving you.
Okay. All right. So you paid money up front, which covered some kinds of expenses, perhaps editing, formatting, and a cover?
Barely, yes. Okay. Their editing was non-existent. They did format. They made lots of mistakes that I had to catch. And then I was responsible for the photograph, the image for the front cover. Uh-huh. And they had no design sense.
Right, right. So, yeah, this is hard. I will tell you that when I started self-publishing, and I very intentionally self-published into a niche where I knew that self-published books were capable of great success. Like, it's not an accident that I self-published romance novels, because I could see the path, that it was a very ebook market, that if, as long as I got this thing, you know, into those channels at Amazon and figured that part out, I knew that I could, my audience could find me. So self-publishing something that you were trying to self-publish is, of course, harder because the path is just a little less clear everywhere.
Serena, and we know the success for self-publishing tends to be greatest in romance and fantasy. Are those the two categories that really dominate the self-publishing market?
You know, lately, there's people making money successfully in a lot of places, like in diet and exercise, in cooking, in mysteries, in thrillers. Like, it's all possible. But every one of those channels I just named is super obvious what it is. Like, if I showed you a cover of a cookbook right now, you would know exactly what was in there. And so if you have something that's more thoughtful, like Kate's book, that doesn't have an audience that's super obvious right from the start, or if you don't have a lot of, another thing that people are successful self-publishing is something that's very niche, but you already know your market. Like, if you travel the world speaking to large audiences about, you know, vocal success, and you are already in front of all of those people, and then self-publishing a book because you're in contact with that potential audience is also another way to find what you're looking for.
And so, I think that's why The Singing Through Change was successful, is because the three of us have been in this field for like over 100 years, and we had thousands of people in our audience anyway.
Right. So you got to cut yourself a little bit of slack there, that like that project had had a place to go, like a channel that was ready. So that's the first thing that I would notice, is that your path was always going to be a little bit harder. Now, I started self-publishing at the same time that I was also being published by a big five publisher. And I just wanted to try it both ways. And I quickly figured out that I could just make more money when I published by myself. So that became my avenue of choice. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, well, everyone should do this. Like, you know, this is great. Everyone should do this. Yeah, it ate my life. And I suddenly work, you know, 14 hours a day reliably. And so then it took me quite a while to see the flip side of it, which is that this stuff is really hard. There's a lot of admin in my life I didn't have before, and I'm drowning a little bit. And so then I kind of came around to see why the companies that charge a fee to handle some of these things are so appealing, and why a lot of people end up there, even if it's probably not the right choice.
Serena, if I was going to like hike up into uncharted territory in a mountain, I'm taking a guide with me, right? And it's a very similar sort of story here, where you just don't know how to do this thing. And so why on earth wouldn't you go there without a guide? But it sounds like the guides that you pick, you have to be really careful about.
Yeah. And of course, the price tag of $1,500 for a good editing and a good cover is not bad, right?
Like, right. And that's why I said I'm not opposed to investing in that. I did, you know, just for your audience, I did have to make choices. I didn't do any continuing education in my field that year. And you will mm-hmm. always have choices, but it is right. worth it. It's worth it to find people who really know what they're doing and offer quality work.
Yes. And the thing that's so difficult is if you want to outsource some of the process, which is a completely rational desire, the trick is to find somebody who can do good work in the sector that you're interested in, so that they understand what your book is for, that they understand what kind of cover should be on a book like that, that they, you know, can help you describe your market, or at least, you know, narrow it down a little bit, so that even something simple like the metadata keywords going in for that book are not just completely wrong. And that's a difficult thing to do.
That's not that different from the conversations that, for example, I had with editors before selling Gift of Failure, because you want to know that you and the person you're going to work with to put this book out into the world, whether it's the company you hire for, you know, self-publishing or an editor, that you have the same vision. Do they understand the market? Do they know, you know, what to do with this book? Like, you know, asking questions like, you know, if I'm going to, for example, walk into or be on Amazon or be in a bookstore, where am I going to see this book, and how is it going to be marketed? Those kind of questions are, you know, important questions to ask of either party.
And I think that's why the second book did better, because I aligned myself with one who was a field expert and a wonderful writer and a successful self-publisher. And she took the reins on that.
Right. Yeah. You know, and in order to become the kind of self-publisher that you need to become and not step in the pothole that you stepped in is tremendously time consuming and also requires a little bit of luck. Like there in 2016, you could have found it if you were lucky, like a Yahoo listserv of people who just self-publishes books and you could ask questions of. Like, it existed. It's just that you had to find it somehow, you know, by yourself. There were a few internet chat boards at that time that, you know, that could do that. And these days, these things happen in Facebook groups more often than not. But finding the right one is just difficult.
So here's a question, Serena. Let's say Kate, and this is hypothetical, I don't know if this is true or not. Let's say Kate says, okay, that was a disaster. I want to try to do something else with this book now. Kate, did you have to sign away your rights, or did you get to keep your rights to this book?
Well, in the contract, they held the rights, but it was easy to get the rights back. That was in the fine print.
So that's good.
I do have my rights back. What they don't tell you, though, is that they have no way. Amazon won't take the book down.
Oh, so, wait a second.
So they're still getting anytime that book sells.
You can get that down. You can get that book down.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I might need to contact you.
Yeah. So how your contract says you can have those rights back.
Well, I have them back. Yeah.
So you have a reversion letter that says,
yes.
Dear Kate. Okay.
Yes.
Then all you have to do is send Amazon a cease and desist that basically says that now they're selling the book without the rights to do so. And here's your proof. The people that can also help you with this are the Authors Guild.
Yeah, that was going to be my next topic, was absolutely the Authors Guild is such a phenomenal resource and they can advocate for you.
Right. So,
all right. Well, thank you for that. Wow.
Yeah. A membership in the Authors Guild costs, I believe, $125 a year. I'm a member. I just don't remember exactly how much I pay for it.
And, actually, can I correct that? Because it's really cool, actually. There's a sliding scale. Like, you can join, what they ask is, how much do you make from your books, essentially? And then they give you a suggested category that you should join in.
But the bottom rung is 125, I'm pretty sure.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And, but it's a great organization, and advocacy is their entire purpose. And not only do they advocate, like, at the congressional level for authors all the time, but you can personally ask for help. You can push a button and say, this is my legal problem. Here's my reversion letter. Book is still up on Amazon. Please help.
Thank you. That's valuable for people to know.
I also get a daily email from the Writers Guild because there are lots of authors asking questions all the time. And so even if it doesn't get addressed on some like high level, the Authors Guild takes care of it, authors are constantly giving each other feedback and answers to questions every single day. And I read it just because I'm curious about what other authors are facing out there in the world. It's really interesting.
That's great.
Serena actually utilized them just recently, and they came to her rescue on something very, very quickly. So it's been, you know, the Authors Guild is an often overlooked and should not be overlooked resource for authors. So, okay, Serena, so if she's got her rights back and she can get Amazon to take it down, what does she do next?
Well, assuming that you want to republish, you can use... I hire a cover designer for every single book, but it's not strictly necessary. If you have a friend who's really good at design, you know, you don't want to just make your cover at home because laying text over imagery is difficult and it has to be done carefully so that it's very legible. But, you know, it's not a $1,000 commitment to recover that book. And formatting is something that is pretty inexpensive these days because there are so many people who are publishing by themselves that I use a piece of software called Vellum by 180G. But even if you don't want to go and figure out how to format in Vellum, you can have somebody do that for under $100. And when a book is formatted, we should say what that means. Writers usually use something like Word or Scrivener to create their document. And then after that document is edited, it needs to be turned into an ebook. And an ebook is essentially just a fancy HTML document. It's a fancy web document. And ebooks have what we call flowing text, which means... you don't design page by page like a paperback book. So to publish your book in paperback requires design that you know what every single page break looks like. But to design an ebook is a different animal. So you would pay a formatter for each of these things. You would get a file for your paperback that's in PDF form, and you would get a file for your ebook that's EPUB form. And then you would have, plus your cover, which is another PDF, you would have all the things you need to make an account somewhere like Amazon KDP, which stands for Kindle. I use KDP every day and I never think about it. Kindle Digital Publishing, I'm pretty sure.
That's okay. For a few weeks there, we didn't know our own email address, so that's all right.
Wow. Okay. KDP, which I type into my browser every single day. Yeah. So then you would make an account there, and they need to know things like your tax status and how to pay you. But that's like a couple hours, you know, not a big, huge time commitment of setting up that account.
Could I ask a question?
Of course.
Your tax status, did you end up setting up a sole proprietorship or something like that? Or
A sole proprietorship is just by default. Like if you go in and you fill out your name and your social security number, you are the sole proprietor. And when I first began publishing, I did almost that, which is that I got... from the state I live in, a business name, like a doing business as DBA name, so that I could have a business name that was not my legal name.
Right.
But it's a very thin distinction. It, for tax purposes, means exactly nothing. It's just like a one step of privacy so that I could publish as Rennie Road Books, which was my old name. And then after I started to make some money, I did have to change my status. I formed an LLC and I elected S-Corp taxation for my LLC, which then changed my tax status. And that is complicating.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But it's not important from a legal perspective to do this, because writers are not given much legal protection by an LLC. Like, if you write your own stuff and you publish your own stuff, the legal protections of an LLC are practically useless. That's not true if you own, say, an apartment building and you rent out units and somebody gets hurt. The LLC is actually a very durable legal protection, but writers don't enjoy that same protection because they are personally liable for everything they've written. So an LLC is not super useful to authors unless they are also changing their tax status, which is what I use mine for.
I think an LLC also added some benefit in terms of, like, if you carry a lot of stock or something like that, there can be some benefits. But that's the only reason I'd heard that it made any difference. So it sounds like learning. So if we're to learn from our mistakes, number one, it's not fatal if you have something that has failed and you made all the mistakes and it's just gone nowhere, especially if you're able to get your rights back, which it sounds like you have, and it sounds like you can get it taken down. And if you wanted to redo it under some other format, it sounds like that's a possibility. And at the very least, redoing that could be an incredible education. We talk about this all the time. Sometimes you have to pay, quote, tuition, which is either experience or the money that you sank into it in the first place that went nowhere. That's tuition. It's just education and learning how to do it differently next time. So that's sort of I think that's reassuring. You know, we all screw up, and being able to make hay out of it, whether just in the form of education, is important.
Well, yeah, thank you for that.
Everybody has this problem. I have contracts I've signed that I'm sorry about. Like, I just do. With some very big companies too. Like, I wish I hadn't done that deal, and I wish I hadn't done this one. And that stuff happens. And, you know, the best thing you can do is go back and write something new and something that speaks to you in 2021, and then do it a little better next time.
Do you think there's any, and this, of course, is, I'm not paying attention to what actually Kate might be wanting to do, but is there any benefit sometimes in just cutting loose, letting things go and saying, let's just move forward and change, you know, what we're doing going forward, but not get so precious about those words that were back there 6 years ago and move forward with something new?
That's what I chose to do, although always in the back of my mind, I mean, I've been fairly kind to myself, mostly through growth, because I'm in my mid-60s now. You learn to cut loose of baggage. but I have in the back of my mind a series of these books. And it might return in another form. I would like to take it down from Amazon, so thank you for the advice on that. And if it feels organic, and if I feel passionate about doing this, I will kind of finish the trilogy that I have on the back of my head, and update the first book to reflect the times a little bit. But there is value sometimes in cutting loose. And of course, when you're in education and you're the type of educators we are, you know that mistakes are actually just fodder for excellence at some point, if you learn from them. I mean, right. I feel like with this project, I reached a point, and just, you know, if you have the image of someone just banging their head against a brick wall, boing, boing. mistakes are very, very valuable, yeah. And you don't crucify yourself for them.
And you never know where Serena is the queen also of finding ways to use all her content. And one of the things that she has learned that she shared with us is if you move forward and you keep moving, there may be use for that content later on. Like if there is interest in the new stuff, that can be a fantastic way to rebrand the old stuff.
Right.
And, you know, every time Serena publishes a new book in her series, suddenly she'll also see an uptick in sales from earlier books from the series. So there are ways to repurpose that material, make bonus material, make, you know, blog posts, all that kind of stuff is can happen. And, you know, it can be sometimes a really, you know, I sold a couple of, in the book I didn't publish, I sold a couple of the chapters as essays in magazines. And those essays led to other things as well. So, yeah, this is, you know, yes, you made mistakes, but there are absolutely ways to not just learn from it, but maybe even to profit from it later on.
Right.
One of the things that we love to come to is a place where people, it sounds like you already are, which is cool. All right. So I made those mistakes and I'm ready to move on and I'm ready to try the next thing. And I think that's a really, really healthy way to look at everything in publishing because, you know, as we move forward and we're sort of so worried about what's going to come next, that's where our heads should be all the time, I think, instead of, you know, constantly worrying about the mistakes we made on the past stuff, because there's nothing we can do about that, whether it's, you know, you have the luxury of taking it off Amazon, but I'm still fretting over sentences I wrote 8 years ago that are still up at, you know, The Atlantic or The New York Times, and I can't do anything about that. So let's look at it this way. You are back in power with your letter that you have in your hands now. And so, you know, look at it that way, as you're in a position of control moving forward, and that's a good place to be.
Well, thank you both so very much for an opportunity for me to learn from both of you and maybe help some others along the way.
I hope so. I think our listeners tend to really like the, okay, let's hear the down and dirty with exactly what went wrong and how to fix it. So, and I also want to make it really clear, we're not saying that all of the companies that do what you hired this company to do are bad. But I think that's an added reason to look at the Authors Guild because they can help with contract stuff as well. And so it's another reason to have that kind of advocacy and knowledge base at your fingertips. And it is a fee that is so worth it, you know, whether you pay whatever level you're paying at. I'm so grateful to be a member of the Authors Guild all the time, just from the education I get there. And if I ever needed them, they're there for me as a writer. So, all right. Are there any last things you want to get in there, Serena, before
we
sign off?
No, I would just like to thank Kate for sharing her story. It's yeah. hard to share a story where you're like, I did it all wrong. You know, that's difficult. And I really appreciate that.
The other nice thing now, Kate, is you have a whole bunch of listeners who are pulling for you. And if you go and if you join the hashtag MWriting Facebook group, I think you'll see that people will be asking for updates, too. People like to hear sort of how things go as we learn from our mistakes and progress.
Well, there you go. I didn't know there was a Facebook group. So you have
there
a new
you go.
Member. You have a new member.
Excellent. Yeah, it's great because over there, people can ask questions like this and say, you know, for example, moving forward, if you're going to be looking for a new editor, you're going to be looking for a cover designer, that can be a really great place to start and say, has anyone else out there had experience with someone that they trust? So that can be a great resource too. So
excited.
All right. Yeah. Oh, good. I'm so glad. That makes me so happy. When, you know, whenever we... the best thing I hear from feedback is, you know, I listened to your podcast and then I was excited to go get writing. So that's all we could ever hope for. So yay. Thank you so, so much, Kate. This has been such a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm, like Serena said, I'm so grateful for people who are willing to share their mistakes because so we can all learn from them instead of just going to our grave with shame and guilt about the mistakes.
You all take care.
Thank you. All right. Until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work. Same.
save, pause, stop.
Thank you.